The Where Our Minds Wander podcast may contain sensitive content. Listener discretion is advised.
Greetings, fellow wanderers, to the places our minds wander.
The house at the end of the dirt road, where disembodied voices whisper and strange sounds make the living shiver.
Where shadows lurk at the edge of the woods, just outside your back door. And mysterious lights speed beyond reason across the clear night sky.
Odd events throughout time that lead you down the rabbit hole.
I'm Wes.
And I'm Beth.
And this is Where Our Minds Wander. Hello and welcome to Where Our Minds Wander, all you fellow wanderers. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, welcome everyone. And thank you for joining us for our 100th episode. Can you believe it that we've made it to 100 episodes?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to believe. You know, it was only 2 years ago that we decided that we wanted to start our own podcast. And other than being listeners, we didn't know much about starting a podcast of our own. But we did what we normally do. We just jumped in head first. We built a home studio, bought all of our equipment, and here we are, 100 episodes published. It has been a learning curve, and it's sometimes like having a second job because there's so much time involved, but it's been worth every bit of it.
Yeah, and what's really cool is that even friends of ours now have started sending us ideas, or like they'll find something kind of cool and they'll be like, what about this? What about that? So that's kind of cool too.
It's really cool.
But you know, I think I always knew way back in the beginning that we'd make it to 100, but it seemed like it was going to be very, very far away. And now here it is.
Yeah, I can remember recording that first episode and having those nerves. And not really knowing much about editing or anything like that. It's like, well, we've done it. Now we've got to put it out.
Yeah. I remember through my whole first story, I was like shaking through the whole thing. Because even though I knew it was being recorded, I still in my mind for some reason thought that people were hearing it right then. Even though I knew they weren't.
Right.
But it was like this, I don't know. I remember I did. I shook through the whole thing and I was sweating.
Well, to me, it was just like, everybody's going to hear every little, you know, word missed.
Right. Or mispronounced.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we made it through. Here we are. We still, you know, mispronounce words. And
well, everybody does.
Right.
So. I've listened to enough podcasts and. Well, you know, we all make mistakes here and there.
Right.
So for all you listeners that were with us from the very beginning, thank you so much for continuing to listen to us. And for those of you that are new to our podcast, thank you so much for giving us a try.
Yeah. Huge shout out to everybody that has supported us from the very beginning, because, you know, it's your 100th episode too, if you've been listening since episode one.
That's true.
So we appreciate you greatly. And as Wes said, all the new listeners too. We appreciate you as well.
And the other night, we watched the Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose movie, which was pretty freaking cool.
It was really good. We covered Jeff the Talking Mongoose. Gosh, it was like way back in episode 23, I think. And we had mentioned then that they were making a movie about it. So it was pretty good. I got a kick out of it. I thought it was well done.
Yeah, it was decent. And it had a lot of good actors in it.
It did. It had Christopher Lloyd and Minnie Driver. And I'm blanking on the name of the lead. Simon Pegg. He was Nandor Fodor.
Well, it was nice to see Minnie Driver. Haven't seen her in ages.
I know. And she did a great job.
That she did. And I did like it. It was different.
You never actually see Jeff, which I think was brilliant. It was a good way to do it.
Yeah. I think they did justice to the story.
Yeah. And you all may have noticed that we have a brand new logo. We thought it was a good time to change it up a little. And earlier today, Wes added it to our TeePublic store. So you all have it as an option now, as one of the designs you can choose if you want some merch with the new logo on it.
Yeah, we did. And we thought it was time to create a new one because our other one was, I liked it, but it really didn't speak to me. You know what I'm saying? It just didn't represent us all that well.
Right.
And I think we nailed it with this one.
That's pretty cool. I do like it. You did a good job.
So do you want to tell everybody what we're talking about tonight?
Yeah. So for our episode tonight, we thought we'd focus on an area of the United States that has everything you could possibly want from the paranormal, from a lake monster to numerous hauntings to Bigfoot to UFOs. And there are so many accounts of all of these things that we decided we really needed to break it up into a part one and a part two, which we've never done before. But we kind of needed to give justice to all the different things. So in part one tonight, I'm going to start off and then you're going to jump in with the second half.
That's right, I am. So without further ado, why don't you get us started, Beth?
All right. So 24 million years ago in present-day California and Nevada, there was fire, earthquakes, brimstone, and ice. First, a massive shifting of two fault lines created the area's highest peaks and a massive valley. Then, Mount Pluto erupted, sending lava towards the valley, creating a natural dam. This new basin filled with snowmelt, creating a lake. More volcanic eruptions caused a new outlet to be carved, and it also filled with water when it cooled, creating the Truckee River. As if the landscape hadn't seen enough upheaval, an ice age began, and huge glaciers carved into the canyon walls, leaving behind broad U-shaped valleys. Then the ice age ended, and a 22-mile-long, 12-mile-wide lake remained, sitting 4,580 feet above sea level. With approximately 72 miles of shoreline, the lake became home to many indigenous people, known as the Washoe, for over 10,000 years. The lake was essential to their way of life. They camped along its shores, hunting and fishing so that they were able to eat all year round. Now, interestingly, they didn't tell tales about a lake serpent until the white settlers showed up. But the Washoe people did have legends about water babies, which were small 3 to 4 foot humans with long black hair, and a thunderbird-like creature that coexisted with them, not always peacefully. But the lake was considered sacred, and the Washoe people cared for it greatly. They named it Dauga, or Edge of the Lake. When white settlers moved in, they mangled the name and called it Lake Tahoe. Today, beautiful Lake Tahoe is a haven for tourists and visitors, with world-class skiing, hiking, boating, and fishing. Plus, there's more than a handful of luxury resorts and casinos in the nearby towns. Lake Tahoe itself is the third deepest lake in North America and the 10th deepest in the world, which I did not know. Thought that was kind of cool. Its greatest measured depth is 1,645 feet, with an average of about 1,000 feet. Although the majority of it sits in present-day California, it actually straddles the border with Nevada, so essentially it's a lake in two states at the same time. After the Lewis and Clark expedition in 1804, President Thomas Jefferson wanted to keep Western exploration and expansion going strong. Beginning in 1842, John C. Fremont led 5 expeditions west across California, Nevada, and Oregon. he explored Lake Tahoe in 1844. Now, although he was anti-slavery, he wasn't against slaughtering indigenous people, and he led three massacres: the Sacramento River Massacre, the Klamath Lake Massacre, and the Sutter Buttes Massacre. So there's that. But he also basically kickstarted the Oregon Trail. One group of pioneers traveling the wagon trails are quite famous, and for many of them, their lives ended near Lake Tahoe. In November of 1846, the Donner Party became stuck in Truckee, just north of the lake. Out of the almost 90 people who were trapped by the endless snowfall, half were children under the age of 18. As I'm sure many of you know, the Donner Party suffered through a horribly harsh winter in the Sierra Nevadas, resorting to the cannibalism of two native guides and fellow travelers. Rescuers from California tried to reach the Donner Party, but they couldn't get to them until the middle of February in 1847, almost 4 months after they'd become stranded. Only 48 of the 87 people survived, and most of the survivors were children. One survivor, one-year-old Isabella Breen, lived until 1935. People today have claimed to see the ghostly apparitions of the Donner Party at their former encampment, which is now the Donner Memorial State Park's Emigrant Trail Museum. They especially see Tamsin Donner, the wife of one of the wagon train leaders, George Donner. Tamsin Donner was a well-educated woman, especially in geometry, botany, and philosophy. She spoke fluent French, and in her free time, she painted and wrote poetry. She was also quite a good shot with a pistol. Described as tiny, she was barely 5 feet tall and weighed just 96 pounds, but she was always gracious and welcoming. Over the decades since Tamsin passed away, overnight campers near the former encampment have claimed to see her apparition at night, wandering alone through the dark. She appears as sort of shadowy and glimmery at the same time, and then she just seems to disappear into the darkness. Other visitors have interacted with a man whom they describe as Whiskered. Seen in broad daylight, the man doesn't appear ghostly at all until he walks up to a building and seems to pass right through the wall. When the Comstock load of silver was discovered in Virginia City, Nevada in 1859, a second wave of settlers rushed to the Lake Tahoe area, hoping to strike it rich. According to the Visit Lake Tahoe website, Tahoe became a boom town, filled with new jobs and lots of money. It also caused 80% of the forests to be cut down in order to build their mine shafts, hotels, saloons, and housing. With the California Gold Rush in full swing at the time, 300,000 prospectors made their way through Tahoe. Once the Transcontinental Railroad came to California, Lake Tahoe became the premier place for the wealthy to come play. One such millionaire was George Whittell Jr., who arrived in the Lake Tahoe area by the 1900s. Again, according to Visit Lake Tahoe, Whittell was incredibly wealthy, and by the 1920s, he was known as a pretty flashy guy, owning automobiles, airplanes, boats, and exotic animals. For example, his pet lion cub named Bill went everywhere with him. I love Bill the lion.
Yeah, kind of cute.
Bill.
I don't think I'd want one as a pet.
I know, but just that he named him Bill.
Yeah. Bill, for the name of a lion, seems pretty tame.
I know. I wonder if his full name was like William the Great or I don't know. William the Lionheart? It was Richard the Lionheart. Okay, I'm going to stop babbling. In the 1930s, Whittell was able to acquire 40,000 acres of land, including 25 miles of Lake Tahoe shoreline, from the Carson and Tahoe Lumber and Fluming Company. Initially, he planned to open a casino, hotel, and ski resort on his acreage, but he realized that he enjoyed his privacy way more than he enjoyed being around other people. By the end of the decade, he had built his private dream home, which he named the Thunderbird Lodge. According to Only in Your State, the lodge was built by architect Frederick J. DeLongchamp, who eventually became Nevada's state architect. The Thunderbird Lodge is a mix of stone masonry, ironwork, and woodwork, and it basically looks like an alpine lodge, except its exterior is mostly made of stone. And since he really didn't like having people over, the main lodge doesn't have a single guest room inside. But he did add on a bunch of outbuildings, like the Card House, where he entertained his neighbors, Ty Cobb and Howard Hughes, with all-night card games. There was also a caretaker's cottage, a butler cook's house, a gatehouse, and an elephant house, where Whittell's 2-ton Indian elephant named Mingo lived.
Now that's a good name for an elephant.
I know. Mingo and Bill, the lion.
So he collected exotic animals.
He did. And hung out with Howard Hughes and Ty Cobb. The boathouse was built specifically for Whittell's 55-foot mahogany and stainless steel yacht, which he also called the Thunderbird. Whittell disliked visitors so much that he also had a siren attached to the dock that would trigger if anyone approached the boathouse. And to add to his recluse-like lifestyle, he had a 600-foot tunnel dug out that connected the boathouse to his lodge. So as you can imagine, a man like Whittell probably didn't like the idea of someone else living in his grand house. And that might be why people have considered the entire estate haunted for decades. But not just by him. Various former workers, employees, and even Whittell's mistress are said to still wander the property. People have claimed to hear disembodied voices inside and outside the main lodge, as well as on some of the walkways, in the tunnel, and in the boathouse. They've also seen apparitions, especially in the former butler's cook's house, which was later converted into a guest house. In 2022, a Sierra Sun article outlined some people's experiences and encounters with the paranormal at Thunderbird Lodge. Although Bill Watson, the property's chief executive, historian, and curator since 2006, claims to never had a paranormal experience there, he does admit that at least one psychic told him that they could sense Whittell, who passed away in 1969, standing next to him. Watson doesn't discount people's experiences, even though he's a skeptic himself. Like the apparition of Jimmy Lee, a former chef who worked at the lodge in 1954. Now, he died while he was bringing trash out to the incinerator. He was mauled by a black bear during his trash run, and he later died from his injuries. And guests claim to still see him carrying on his daily duties at the lodge.
What a way to go.
I know. Isn't that horrible?
Taking out the trash, you get mauled by a bear.
Yeah. There's also the apparition of May Mulhagen, Whittell's mistress. She was killed in a car accident while driving one of Whittell's cars near Crystal Bay. Guests at Thunderbird Lodge have claimed to hear her whispering and to see her ghostly figure wandering the grounds. And lastly, there's the ghost of a worker who allegedly died on the property in the 1940s while a pool house was under construction. Wattel allegedly walled off the spot where the worker died, but visitors claim to see his spirit wandering the area. Now, I had mentioned earlier that Wattel loved exotic animals, Mingo and Bill, and he did kind of have a zoo of his own. So it's quite possible that he knew of the legends surrounding Lake Tahoe's lake cryptid, a massive serpent that people call Tessie. I had also mentioned earlier that the Washoe people didn't start talking about a lake serpent until the white settlers showed up. And that's also true of the Paiute people. They told stories about a serpent-like creature that lived in an underwater tunnel near Cave Rock on the eastern shore of the lake. According to sfgate.com, one of the best-known early accounts of a run-in with Tessie was featured in the Examiner in 1897. A San Francisco socialite named I.C. Coggin submitted an article outlining his firsthand account. He said a massive serpent-like creature slithered past him on shore while he hid behind a tree. According to Coggin, the creature was so heavy that it crushed small trees with its weight, and its head was 14 feet wide. I double-checked that. I was like, feet or inches? No, feet. Its eyes were jet black. He was quoted as saying, "I know many will doubt this story, but sooner or later his snake ship will be seen by so many that all doubt will be removed." End quote. The stories of Tessie were somewhat confirmed in the 1950s when a team of divers reported seeing an underwater cave and some sort of massive creature swimming out of it. Then there's the rumor that oceanographer Jacques Cousteau himself completed several dives beneath the surface of the lake in the 1970s, only to return to the surface and claim, quote, "The world isn't ready for what's down there." Fast forward to the 1980s, when a whole slew of people claimed to have sightings, and then in the 1990s, a couple of kayakers did, too. Allegedly, a crew member of the Tahoe Queen snapped a photo of Tessie. So the lake monster was a pretty enduring myth. But maybe it's not just a myth. According to RenoScuba.com, in June of 1982, two off-duty police officers, Chris Beebe and Jerry Jones, were water skiing on the lake when they both saw an unusually large creature swim past them. They described it as dark gray or black and at least 10 feet long. Then, two women spotted Tessie on July 12, 1984. Patsy McKay and Diane Stavarakis, who were both Tahoe City residents, were hiking along the west shore when they noticed something odd. Some sort of massive creature kept surfacing in the water, quote, like a little submarine. But a submarine that McKay estimated was 17 feet long and more whale-like than boat-like. A year later, two filmmakers were shooting a commercial at Zephyr Cove when Tessie apparently made an appearance. As the film crew recorded footage of a romantic scene for a commercial, they were distracted by a massive wake that seemed to come from out of nowhere, causing an anchored boat to bob up and down. Next, they saw a brown hump surface above the water, and the children who were being filmed at the time started screaming. If they did manage to get it on film, the footage doesn't exist, unfortunately. In 1988, the Examiner ran another article about Tahoe Tessie, claiming he or she was seen by an optician, a pair of nuns, and 10 post office employees. Then, in 2005, longtime police officer and county constable Mickey Daniels was driving a chartered fishing boat across the lake. An avid fisherman, he stopped along the east shore and cast his fishing line into the water. There were no other boats around. His experience was written up in the LA Times. He said a V-shaped wave suddenly came out of nowhere, as if a giant creature was about to surface. Then it just seemed to submerge back under. For the rest of his life, Daniels firmly believed that only a creature as big as Tahoe Tessie could have caused that strange wake.
Well, Beth, that's a lot of sightings up until this point.
I know. Big giant lake monster and then hauntings, too.
Yeah.
I also love how they said in the Examiner that it was two nuns.
I know.
As part of the...
And an optician.
And an optician.
Because his eyesight would be clear.
Yes.
And the nuns wouldn't lie about it.
Well, nuns would not lie.
And postal workers, well...
Well, there was 10 of them.
That's right. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Hey, did you know? Although it is very rare, there is a condition out there known as locked-in syndrome, or pseudo-coma. People who suffer from LIS lose all motor function of their limbs and are basically in a comatose state. They are totally conscious, totally aware, and totally unable to move. It sounds downright terrifying. However, most are able to move their eyes, and some can move their cheek muscles. Some people with LIS have been able to communicate through blinking or eye movement, but advances in technology have allowed some people with LIS to communicate through brain-computer interfaces, devices that analyze brain waves, basically reading a person's thoughts. One woman named Anne received a brain implant that actually analyzes her thoughts and uses an AI voice to speak them for her. Who'da thunk it?
All right, we're back. Now, to swing back to that Jacques Cousteau quote, the one where he said that the world wasn't ready for what was under the water in Lake Tahoe. Now, I have to admit that there is absolutely no record of Cousteau ever diving in the lake or even visiting the area. It's just a rumor that has persisted for the last 30 to 40 years. But the alleged quote attributed to him has spurred people to speculate if someone was trying to get people to pay more attention to the lake bodies, and they used the famous explorer's name as a way to try and focus some attention on the issue.
Wait a second. Did you just say, you said it so nonchalantly, did you just say lake bodies?
Yes, I did.
Oh. Carry on then.
Now, this story of the lake bodies began as sort of an urban legend. People repeatedly shared the tale of an unlucky fisherman who was trolling along the lake when his line got snagged. When he was finally able to free it, he pulled up the line, only to find a human ear was dangling from the end.
Oh my gosh.
I know, can you imagine?
Just an ear.
Yeah, I've pulled up weird things like clams and stuff, but an ear?
A clam and an ear are not the same thing.
Another version says that it wasn't an ear, that it was a three-fingered human hand.
Oh, that's better.
But despite which version you might have heard, the legend of the lake bodies has been around for quite a while, ever since the mob came to Lake Tahoe in the 1920s. The water off the southern shore is around 900 feet deep, and it was a favorite spot for the mafia to dump hundreds of their victims for a span of about 30 years. Due to the lake's cold temperatures, the hundreds of bodies have been submerged and perfectly preserved for decades, earning the area the disturbing nickname, the Graveyard. But even if the stories of the mob casting off their corpses isn't true, it certainly is true that countless boaters have unfortunately lost their lives in the lake. According to an article in Forbes magazine, Lake Tahoe locals have claimed for decades that if you could dive to the bottom of the lake, you'd find yourself surrounded by hundreds of bodies, still dressed in clothing from every decade.
It reminds me of what mountain is it where they call it like the Rainbow Bridge, where there's all the bodies of the hikers that are still there from,
right,
you know, from present day back,
right,
many decades.
See, and that's another reason why I don't go in the water.
It's a good reason.
Fishermen have claimed to see dead bodies floating on the surface when the lake's temperature rises. This, at least, is partly true. Well, sort of. In 2018, a man's body, still in his wetsuit, was recovered from the lake. He had gone missing 17 years earlier and had presumably been in the lake for all that time. One thing divers have found for sure is an entire grove of perfectly preserved 80-foot-tall trees, still standing upright, basically an underwater forest. These trees have been submerged for over 2,000 years.
That's cool. I'd rather see that than dead bodies.
And the state of California has opened up diving excursions to dozens of the shipwrecks in Emerald Bay. But if you're like me and scuba diving isn't your thing, if you would rather really be on dry land, then there's certainly many more paranormal places around Lake Tahoe. Like the famous Calneva Lodge and Casino on the North Shore. The building literally sits on the border of California and Nevada, half in one state and half in the other. From the outside, it resembles a typical motel lodge with a large wooden A-frame entrance. Inside, it's a little swankier, with gleaming polished wood floors and a giant rough-cut stone fireplace. There were pool tables, slot machines, and gambling tables, as well as a bar. Originally built in 1926 by real estate developer Robert P. Sherman, the Calneva was an instant hotspot for Hollywood elite, politicians, and the wealthy. It made headlines in 1929 when silent film actress Clara Bow bounced several checks to the hotel, totaling $13,000, which is a little under $220,000 in today's money. She claimed it wasn't her fault. She had been gambling with what she thought were 50-cent chips, not the $100 ones, that the casino said that she had used. So, when she left blank checks with the hotel in good faith, she wasn't expecting to owe such a huge sum on the 149 chips she'd lost playing blackjack.
Oh my gosh.
That's a lot.
Can you imagine thinking that they were only 50-cent chips and losing 149 of them and then finding out that they were really $100 chips?
I'd go into hiding.
No wonder she bounced some checks,
yeah,
trying to pay them.
That same year, Canadian Army Colonel H.H. Betts disappeared from his hotel room, and his body wasn't discovered until a year later, 5 miles away from the hotel. In 1935, Judy Garland performed at the Calneva. She was 13 years old. 2 years later, in 1937, a fire broke out, engulfing the Calneva, causing $200,000 in damage, about $4 million in today's money.
Yikes.
The entire place was rebuilt in just 30 days. Beginning in the 1950s, the Kennedy family frequented the lodge, including JFK, who allegedly entertained several women who were not his wife.
Well, that's not a shocker.
I know. And entertainer Frank Sinatra made his first visit in 1951, when his overdose on sleeping pills made national news. He really liked the place.
Wait, back up. You were so cheerful about the way you just said that. Frank Sinatra went there and he overdosed and he really liked it.
I said he really liked the place.
I know.
It was I don't just... think that he liked overdosing.
Right. But I'm thinking, you know, you're saying all these Hollywood elite were there, but they didn't have great luck there.
No, but they had a good time.
I bet they, I guess they did.
Well, something to look back on, right?
Right.
Say, hey, remember when we were at the lodge and, you know, JFK had his mistresses there and we overdosed on pills?
Yeah. Sounds like a great weekend.
It sounds like fun. So Frank really liked the place. And in 1960, he purchased it with a group of friends and business partners. One partner was Paul Skinny D'Amato, owner of the infamous 500 Club. Another partner was Sam Giancana, a known Chicago mobster. And another was fellow entertainer Dean Martin. Who, by the way, if you don't know, I love Dean Martin.
I know, but I think it's just funny that you were like, okay, so Sinatra's partners were was this Italian mob guy and this Italian mob guy and Dean Martin.
Well, everybody knows that Sinatra was connected to the mob.
I think his, I'm predicting that his activities at the Calaneva are leaning that way thus far, but we'll see.
Well, no wonder that there's so many bodies at the bottom of the lake.
Yeah.
The Calaneva continued to be a hot spot for Hollywood elites. From Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli to Shirley MacLaine, Sammy Davis Jr., Tony Curtis, Janet Leigh, and Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. By 1962, Sinatra owned more than 50% of the Calneva. He added a helipad and opened up the Celebrity Room Theater. He also kept the lodge open year-round. He apparently also reopened the Prohibition-era tunnels that ran under the property, rumoredly as a way for the mafia to come and go undetected. And the mafia seemed to contribute to a large part of the Calneva's reputation, or at least the U.S. government thought so. They began looking into the casino when they suspected Joseph Kennedy Sr. was using it as a front for mafia activities and that the renovations were paid for by the mob boss Jimmy Hoffa.
Now there's a name. Jimmy Hoffa.
Mm-hmm.
Did they ever find him?
No.
I didn't think so.
And the Kennedys also spent a lot of time there. As I said earlier, JFK was rumored to entertain various women at the casino, including Marilyn Monroe. Wanting to keep her away from the media, both Robert Kennedy and JFK asked Sinatra to let Monroe hide out in one of the property's cabins. No one was allowed to visit her that weekend, including her ex-husband Joe DiMaggio, who did try and he was turned away by security. Now, Monroe, like Sinatra, overdosed on pills, but she was rushed to the hospital in time to have her stomach pumped. A week later, she was found dead in her Los Angeles home. By 1967, Sinatra sold the Calneva, but he didn't sell it to Howard Hughes, as he had hoped. He sold it to Caesar's Palace.
I think he had a falling out with Howard Hughes, and that's why he didn't buy it, I believe.
Currently, the Calneva is owned by McWinney Real Estate Firm and is under renovation, so it's closed until 2026. As you would probably imagine, people say that Frank Sinatra and even Marilyn Monroe are still there. Various paranormal investigators have picked up some interesting EVPs in Monroe's cabin. Like, for example, a woman's voice saying, "It's not so." And, "Do you want to see a movie?" Guests have also sworn that they've seen her apparition in a stairwell in the main casino. As for Frank Sinatra, people claim to sense his presence, and he may very well still be there. But historically, when ghost hunters go looking for him, they run into someone else entirely different. One group holding a seance watched as the face of the medium in the group seemed to contort, and he squinted one eye. Then, as if embodying someone else completely, He held his hand up to his face as if he was smoking a cigarette. The whole group felt a chill as they realized he looked eerily similar to Sammy Davis Jr.
Well, I mean, if you're looking for Frank Sinatra and you end up finding Sammy Davis Jr., I think that's a fair trade. I wouldn't be disappointed.
Well, I gotta say, I was never a fan of Sinatra, but I loved Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr.
Mm-hmm.
But the most dominant spirit at the Calneva is believed to be a Washoe shaman. There are countless reports of people both seeing her and catching her voice on audio equipment. According to Moonshine, Inc., one employee was clearing off the main stage when he felt a frigid cold breeze rush past him, and he saw the stage curtains move, as if something had walked by. Thinking quickly, he pulled out his cell phone and snapped some pictures, and in one, he caught the figure of a person in what appears to be a long white robe with colorful beads around her neck. Paranormal groups who have claimed to see the figure in white have also captured an older woman's voice saying, "Do not come."
That makes sense if they think that it was built on, that whole area was inhabited by the Washoe. So it makes sense that there would be some apparitions, some residual energy there.
Perhaps so. But even regular guests are catching strange things in their cell phone pictures, from orbs to shadowy figures to odd streaks of light. Some are even having strange, unexplained experiences, like their lights flickering and their water faucets turning off and on. So the Calneva isn't really known as a haunted location. People who go there in general go because it's a great place to stay, especially for skiers or for people who have a thing for the days of the Rat Pack.
Like you.
That's right. But for those people who want to specifically visit haunted places in Lake Tahoe, there are plenty to choose from. You can spend hours online reading about the dozens of places. Trust me, I did. And it went on and on and on.
I bet you did. I did too when I was looking up stuff for my half of the story.
But I wanted to end with this great little story about the Truckee Hotel and Moody's Bistro Bar and Beats, and not just because it has a cool name, because it certainly does.
Tell me the name again. Moody's what?
Moody's Bistro Bar and Beats.
That is a great name.
It is. That's what I just said. But I'm glad you agree with me.
Sorry.
The Moonshine, Inc. article that I had mentioned earlier shared the encounter that owner J.J. Morgan had while renovating part of the bar area. In 2018, he shared that sometimes when he'd go up to the fourth floor of the building by himself, he'd feel as though something was off, and he'd want to get back downstairs as quickly as possible. But it was down in the bar area during renovations that he had his most poignant experience. The bar was closed as Morgan and his partner were digging up part of the floor. But all of a sudden, an elderly man was standing next to them, as though he had just walked in. As the old man stood there, he said, "There's a mural in the wall." Both of the men went to remove their mask so they could ask him what he had meant. And when they lifted up their mask, they blocked their sight of him for just a second, and the man had completely disappeared. They shrugged it off as a little weird but not supernatural, and they continued digging. A week later, Morgan was shocked by what his contractor had to say during a Sunday 7 a.m. phone call. They had opened a wall in the building, exposing the original wall that had been hidden behind layers of sheetrock for years, and there was indeed a mural. It had been hidden for almost 80 years.
That's a cool story.
It's a bit chilling.
It is, but it isn't. It's kind of cool. It was like, you know, he knew that they were renovating and he didn't want them to destroy the mural that was there. And they didn't. I mean, that's cool. I like that story.
So that brings us to the end of the weird and wonderful Lake Tahoe. From lake monsters to hauntings to possible bodies under the water. There's quite a bit going on there.
There really is.
I mean, we didn't even have any time to touch on the Bigfoot sightings or the UFO sightings.
No, so we'll leave those for next episode, part two. We'll cover Lake Tahoe, Bigfoot, and UFOs.
I know, it's going to be a first for us.
A two-parter.
Two-parter. I've always wanted to do it.
We've grown up.
Yeah.
We're 100 and we're...
Some of us have grown up.
Oh, I was going to, you know, say about how it only took us 100 episodes, but we grew up. Never mind. And I'm the immature one.
I don't want to grow up. I want to be a Toys R Us kid.
You are a Toys R Us kid.
Well, with that said, Beth has all our sources down in our show notes. Don't you, Beth?
I do. And you can check them out, of course, as always. That's where we got the information that we used to create our episode.
Yeah, we didn't just make it all up.
No. And you can't blame us. If anything's made up, it's the people that we used as our sources.
Right.
But anyway, if you'd like to know more, of course, there's tons more, especially if you want to look more into the hauntings of Lake Tahoe, because there is a lot.
But I say you wait till part two's over with, so you don't spoil it for yourselves.
That's true.
Well, with that said, join us next week for an all new episode of Where Our Minds Wander.
See you soon.